And so we're going to begin today by once more reviewing our first new vision, mission, and core values. So let's first of all look at our vision. The vision is our absolute vision for the entire world, a vision of infinite good. Will you, with all the power you know how to muster this morning, affirm that with me together? In oneness of spirit, we celebrate a world awakened to infinite possibilities. And our mission, and this is also printed on the front of your bulletin if you have any trouble seeing the screen, the mission is we are a vibrant, inclusive, spiritual community enriching lives through positive prayer, education, and service. And finally, our core values. And we'll start at the top and go around clockwise. They are spirit-led, love, oneness, acceptance, welcoming, and spiritual growth. You know, I love our core values because I think they really do describe who we are as a spiritual community. However, I think we have one that didn't make the list. And I think it didn't make the list because, for one thing, we were only allowed to have 5 or 6. And for another, I think it is so us that we don't stop and analyze it and think about it. And the one that I am talking about, our unwritten core value, I believe, is joy. I think this spiritual community has an unbelievably joyous spirit. And it is exudes and it is visible by anyone who walks in the front door. And in so many ways, we are great joy. Do you all agree with that? You think? I think it's really important. And you know, I heard a story recently about a couple who had a joyous relationship for 50 years. And at the point of their 50th anniversary, a lot of the people in the crowd, the friends and relatives, were saying, "Share your secret with us. You two seem so happy and so joyous. Share your secret." So the husband stood up. And he said, "Well, lots of people have asked the secret to our happy marriage, so today I'm going to share it." He said, "Twice a week we play golf, and then we go to this lovely restaurant where there is fine wine and beautiful music and this lovely ambiance." And he said, "That it really is the secret of our relationship." And people were really impressed that, you know, this couple could do this for 50 years and keep that, sustain that tradition. And then before he sat down, he said, "Oh, by the way, in case you want to know, she goes on Thursdays and I go on Fridays." So, the question is, was that marriage one of great joy or was it one of avoidance? I'm not sure. You get to decide. You get to decide. But in an article published in Uni Magazine, Dr. Christine Northrup writes about how joy keeps us healthy. In fact, her article is entitled "Prescription for Joy." And here's what she says. She says, "Hormone balance, eyesight, hearing, flexibility, and bone density are all optimal conditions of joy. Joy lowers blood pressure, enhances immunity, and helps protect us from heart disease and dementia." She also notes that when people can't access joy directly, they're more inclined to use substances or develop habits that are not healthy, that seem to make them feel better in the short term, but are not healthy in the long term, such as overeating or alcohol abuse. And she writes, and this is amazing, "Every single system in the body is awash in the chemicals of joy or the chemicals of sadness, resentment, and depression. Resentment is an absolute risk factor for cancer, heart disease, and arthritis, and joy is the prescription that prevents all that." And she gives the actual medical data around that. So if you're interested, see the article. It's called "Prescription for Joy." But here's our question today. If joy is so good for us, why do we resist it? Why are so many people seeming not to be in joy? Well, she says, and Dr. Northrup says, we live in a culture that has real difficulty with the concepts of pleasure and joy. That mindset lives in the myths of Western thought and can be traced back all the way to Adam and Eve. and they are being banished from the garden. The message we grow up with is, don't get too happy, because if you allow yourself to really feel that, you're going to suffer. We're taught that there's a ceiling on our joy, that we can only experience so much of it. And I might add to Dr. Northrup's thoughts that I think we're also taught that we are not deserving of joy. We internalize those messages of our not being good enough. I think it comes from cultural conditioning of parents, sometimes teachers, and too often our embedded theology. It's what we're taught in traditional churches. The myth of original sin, which was actually created and perpetuated by traditional Christianity, leaves many with these feelings of worthlessness. Actually, Christianity is the only faith in the world that talks about original sin. And in Unity, we realize we were born in original what? Goodness. That's right, original goodness. So, there's a quote about this from Ram Dass. He says, "Your problem is that you're too busy holding on to your unworthiness." And I really do believe that if you think you are a scum-sucking sinner, doomed to eternal damnation, where is the joy in all of that, right? By the way, people are giving me credit for that scum-sucking sinner line, but it's not mine. I stole it from Greg Nettler, but I think it's a great line. I love it. I love it. So I know that we've all known people, though, despite all of that data, we've all known people, friends and family members, who seem to radiate a sense of natural joy. So a lot of you in this room do exactly that. And I had a friend and former colleague whose name was Augustine. She comes to mind. Augustine had as her personal mantra the words, "Keep the joy." She had it monogrammed on her clothing, and she had it stamped on her notepaper, and she even used it as a license plate. A slogan. And above her desk, there was a huge sign in calligraphy which read, "I let no person or situation take my joy away." And she didn't. She truly lived her mantra. No matter how stressful the day was at work or how much chaos appeared in her life, Augustine kept the joy. And she taught me something really important, and that is that joy is more than the result of happy outward circumstances. Way too many of us spend our lives in pursuit of joy, not realizing that joy is an inside job. Oscar Wilde wrote, "There are two great tragedies in life. One is not getting what you want, and the other is getting what you want." Because sometimes that thing we wanted so badly does not fulfill us when we get it, does it? It really doesn't. Nothing actually in the outer can fulfill us, and nothing in the outer is permanent. Even when circumstances seem so perfect, we know they might and probably will, like the St. Louis weather, change, right? Change is part of life. And as the Jafalas write in The Quest, we can wait for joy to be triggered by winning the lottery or having someone express love to us or by getting a hole in one. But if we wait for something to turn our joy on, then that means something else can come along and turn our joy off. So joy is really that type of happiness that doesn't depend on what happens. It flows from the source with a capital S, that source which cannot change and from which all good flows. In other words, joy is a spiritual principle. One can choose and use joy every single moment in his or her life, no matter what's going on the outer. And like all spiritual gifts, it's not reserved just for a few. It's for every one of us. It's for every single one of us. It is one of our divine qualities, along with all of our other powers, powers of love and peace and harmony, that make enrich our lives and make us just know that we are one with God through the Christ. We were created to be joy. It is who and what we are, not only as a spiritual community, but as individuals. In Nehemiah, verse 8 through 12, we read, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." And when we stay centered on that Christ of our being, realizing our oneness with God, we work and play, and we can go through every day connected with inner joy. And we know that the love, that the joy, I mean, that wells up within us as we touch the divine is in thought, word, and feeling. We can actually set a daily intention. How many of you set daily intentions? It's really a powerful thing. And we can set a daily intention just to wake up and say, today I'm going to focus on what is joyful. And then throughout the day, we can stop and ask ourselves, how can I express joy, my innate joy, in this very moment, no matter what's going out in the outer? I love this picture. It says, the joy of living wells up within us as we touch the divine in thought and feeling. And I think that is so very true. However, sometimes we spend so much time and we spend so much energy regretting things from the past or worrying about things in the future that we don't feel the joy in the now moment. I read the other day of a man walking down the streets, the crowded streets of New York City, carrying a big sign that read, Jesus is coming. And right behind him, following right in his tracks, somebody else had a sign saying, maybe some of you knows it, Buddha here now. And truly, Christ is here now too, right? Christ is here now too. And Jesus said time and time again, the kingdom is in the midst of you. The kingdom is here and now. There's a story I want to share with you today from the Hebrew Bible that I think is pertinent to our topic of joy. It features Abraham, the father of Jewish history, the patriarch. And we discussed a few weeks ago, I think it was when we were doing welcoming, we discussed the episode where Abraham receives a visit from three strangers. Some of you remember that lesson? And those strangers turned out to be angels announcing that he and his wife Sarah, both in their 90s, would finally have a child. And this is long before in vitro fertilization, right? So wasn't that. So, and then as you remember how the story evolves, it came to pass, Sarah did bear a son, and they named him Isaac. And this is a story that happens later in Isaac's life. I'm going to summarize the story because it's really long, but you can find it in Genesis 22. So here goes. Years after Isaac's birth, Bible scholars think this story was intended to be like 33 years or so after the birth. Years after Isaac's birth, God decided to test Abraham. And he said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. Now remember, this was the son that Abraham and Sarah had waited for almost 100 years. And God is asking Abraham, to take him up as a living burnt sacrifice. So Abraham, no questions asked, rises early in the morning, saddles his donkey, takes his precious son Isaac, cuts the wood for the burnt offering, and prepares to do the sacrifice. As they arrive near Moriah, however, Isaac had said to him, Father, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham says, God will provide the lamb for the offering. Well, when they arrive at the designated place, Adam builds the altar and lays the wood on the fire, and then he ties Isaac up and puts him on top of the wood. And just at the point when Abraham takes the knife in his hand to kill his son, how do you know what happens? You remember? An angel speaks. An angel comes from on high and says to Abraham, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know you fear God, since you have not withheld your son from us. Then Abraham finds a ram and sacrifices it in place of his son. The angel returns and says to him, because you have done this and you have not withheld your son, I will indeed bless you. And then the angel repeats the covenant that has already been issued to Abraham earlier in the story, which is, I will indeed bless you, and I will make your offering, your offspring, as numerous as the stars of the heaven and as the sand on the seashore. And by your offering shall all the nations of the earth gain blessing for themselves, because you have obeyed my voice." This story is probably the most controversial one in the entire Bible. And I'll bet some of you are sitting there thinking, has she lost her mind? Is this a lesson to go with joy? How many of you thought that? I bet a lot of you did. What is she doing up there? Okay, well, I have a point. Stick with me, all right? We know in our human skins, or we ask in our human skins, how could a loving God ever ask this kind of sacrifice of anyone, much less of a man with whom he has entered into a sacred covenant? Well, those who do take this story literally say that it shows that Abraham is a paragon of strength, unquestionably following the will of God and willing to live a life of suffering and sacrifice in order to please the divine. But really, what is divine will for us? God is love, and we are created in the image and likeness of the divine. We are not on this earth to suffer and sacrifice. We are here to fully and completely enjoy this life, to grow spiritually and realize our oneness with God. God's will for us is ever unfolding what? Good, ever unfolding good, ever unfolding peace, ever unfolding love. So to try to figure out what this story means, we have to kind of look at an historical piece here. And that is that, first of all, most of the stories in the Hebrew Bible are mythical. They are meant to convey really developing understandings of spiritual truth. And in fact, in ancient languages, including Hebrew, the words were very simple, and they contained no abstract words. They were dealing with day-to-day survival. Their words talked about, you know, bringing in the crops and how many fish were caught and, you know, all those details of life. Abstractions were not really part of their language. And therefore, the only thing they had to really relay abstract ideas was story. And many of those stories address their thoughts of the nature of God and humankind. And those stories were passed down through generations. So to really get some meaning about this story, we have to realize that in the day, human sacrifice, even including child sacrifice, was practiced. And many Bible scholars think this story was a story to teach the people that that was not what God really wanted. There are lots of references in the Old Testament especially, that refer to this human sacrifice. In the book of Judges, the warrior Jephthah makes an oath that leads to the sacrifice of his own daughter. And throughout the land of Cana today, you can look at archaeological evidence of not only temples dedicated to child sacrifice, I know it's horrible, but also, you know, graves they have uncovered of just multiple mass graves of children. Now, as time went on, thank goodness, the Hebrew people abandoned this practice of sacrifice. They were one of the first cultures that did abandon it in the day. And maybe this story is just a factor in that change. Maybe hearing this story helped the people to realize that that's not what an all-loving God would want. At any rate, we know it's a huge advancement in human consciousness. But that's all well and good, but that's history. The question is, what in the world does this story say to us today? And particularly, what is its connection to joy? Well, you may remember from our story about Isaac's birth that the name Isaac in ancient Hebrew means one who laughs, joy, singing, and leaping. And in the book Mysteries of Genesis, Charles Fillmore suggests that Isaac is a metaphysical representation of joy. And this story is really about Abraham's mistaken belief that his spiritual commitment to God means that he must give up all the joys of this life. And there are people today who still have that mistaken belief. Abraham believed that spiritual growth demanded slaying the consciousness of joy, symbolized by Isaac. And we know without a shadow of a doubt that it was not the allness of God, but Abraham's own limited understanding of that allness that seemed to demand this sacrifice. And we are like Abraham when we think that spiritual growth means sacrificing our human joys. One thing I remember from my Methodist upbringing was a quote by John Wesley. He said, "Sour godliness is the devil's religion." Well, stay tuned. We're going to talk about the devil in 2 weeks when I get back. We're going to talk about the devil. We're going there too. But for now, I just like to say, despite John Wesley's quote there, does he look to you like the most joyful person on the universe? He also wrote a lot about sin. So anyway, the point is that Jesus Christ came to this earth to show us that God does not want us to deny anything except false outer appearances that block our joy. In fact, if you remember in Luke's Christmas story, the angel Gabriel, who came to Mary, delivered a positive, definite message. He said, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause you great joy for all the people." So that is the joy that we have. That is the joy that we are. And in the end, that means my friend Augustine was absolutely right. We shouldn't allow anything or anyone to take away our joy. Augustine sent me a birthday card once. I shared this in the Sacred Circle over the weekend with the prayer chaplains. And on the front of the card, it said, "What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us." And that's actually a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of Charles Fillmore's favorite writers. And inside the card, the text said, "Your inner spirit radiates joy to everyone around you." And that is who we are. Our inner spirit radiates joy, and that means that joy comes back to us 100-fold. True joy, the great joy promised by Gabriel, is a gift from God. It is always part of us, just waiting to be activated. We cannot afford, thank you, Augustine, to let any person or circumstance take away that joy. And so it is. So let's come together now just to feel that joy and that love of God as we affirm the great truth about our God as printed in your bulletin. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.